This Weekend starts right after this.
Do you want to learn how to steal customer credit card information from major retailers so you can buy anything you want?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's award-winning firewalls prevent hackers from taking your valuable data to the bank. Reclaim your network like 150,000 other businesses have. To learn more about protecting customer data and your reputation, visit barracuda.com/firewalls.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Is there value in a celebrity endorsement? I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Who does Oprah support? How about Chuck Norris? We'll examine whether celebrity endorsements matter for presidential campaigns.
State fairs try new gimmicks to draw bigger crowds. Hear what some of them are doing.
The real curse of those lovable losers, the Chicago Cubs.
And the technology changes taking place in the auto industry.
Apple CEO Tim Cook was at a panel discussion recently where the moderator asked him, what do you think is going to happen with the car industry? And he said, I see massive change coming to the car industry as if this is something that hasn't happened yet and is about to happen soon. In reality, anybody who works in the car industry knows it's been undergoing massive change for years now.
Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman on massive tech changes for vehicles. He's here later in the hour. Well, as the presidential campaigns roll on, Democrats and Republicans seem somewhat interested in celebrity endorsements, but do they matter? Boston Globe correspondent Jennifer Scalca Tulumello has been looking into it. Jen, what have you found?
We found that given the fact that there's a celebrity front runner on the Republican side and just the state of social media and public branding these days, that it's really hard for even celebrities to make a splash in the political world. You know, we saw Oprah endorse then-Senator Barack Obama in 2008, and her endorsement, you know, academics studied that. It seemed to make quite a big difference for him in the primary against Hillary Clinton, but no one has stepped forward so far this year with that kind of power and influence.
Interesting. All right, so have we seen any so far? Like, who's endorsing who celebrity-wise?
Sure. So obviously, the campaign still thinks celebrities matter, and we see a regular rollout. I had one academic tell me that rappers and musicians are the new movie stars because their reach and influence is wider and more powerful.
Wow.
And I think that proves out in some sense when we have Hillary Rodham Clinton endorsed by Beyonce and Katy Perry and Carole King even. And then we see Bernie Sanders, the other Democrat frontrunner in that race, rolling out 100-plus celebrity announcement a few weeks back of everyone from comedian Sarah Silverman to actors Danny DeVito and Susan Sarandon, George Wendt, who, as you know, was Norm in Cheers,
wow, right.
Mark Ruffalo, who played the Incredible Hulk, among other people, Will Ferrell. So there was a long list for Sanders, and nobody, again, with the pop and influence of an Oprah.
We're speaking with Jennifer Scalca Tulumello, correspondent with the Boston Globe. She's got a piece called Do Celebrity Endorsements Make a Difference? Wow. Now, I don't know anybody who gives a rip what celebrities think about politics. So explain how this goes down. Does a celebrity just say on Twitter, hey, I'm endorsing so-and-so, or does, say, an entertainment reporter go out and ask the question of a celebrity? Like, how does that work?
So that's a good question. I think there's a lot of activity on Twitter. I'm with HRC, get on board kind of thing.
Okay.
You saw Amy Poehler, who played Hillary Clinton, endorse her on Twitter. And I think that celebrities can have an impact in several ways, probably smaller than they have in the past in terms of scope and influence. But, you know, a celebrity can introduce the candidate at a rally, and just knowing that Sarah Silverman, for example, is going to introduce Bernie Sanders, you know, many thousands of people might actually show up, and campaigns take advantage of that. They'll just help, you know, get contact information for those people so that they can solicit them for financial donations, and just be in contact with them in terms of get out the vote efforts come election day. So having celebrities as a draw to events can be really, really important. They can also just create a general buzz in the media, which stokes the press and gets attention. And I think that, you know, in primary contests in particular, and we see this more and we have seen this more in recent years on the Democratic side, but they can help voters who might see the candidates as quite similar pick between candidates with similar values and beliefs, as we saw in the Clinton-Obama contest in 2008. And in many ways, I mean, Sanders and Clinton are closer together, certainly, than Clinton and Bush would be. So if a celebrity, someone you like or admire, follow on Instagram or on Twitter, says, hey, I like this candidate, you know, younger voters in particular might be more inclined to take a closer look.
Wow. All right, on the Republican side, I think generally speaking, we associate the Hollywood types with leaning left politically. Do Republicans claim any celebrity endorsements?
They do, but you are right. Hollywood does tend to lean left. We've seen Chuck Norris time and again. Doesn't matter how many times Mike Huckabee runs, Chuck Norris will be by his side. Does that matter? I don't know. You tell me. You know, when I contacted Marco Rubio's campaign, they responded by telling me that Rick Harrison from a show on the History Channel called Pawn Stars was one of their top supporters. Now, again, I don't know about you, but I had to look up Rick Harrison and look up Pawn Stars. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz's campaign didn't have anyone to mention. Kid Rock likes Ben Carson, and I guess that you and I might think that Donald Trump is actually a self-endorsed candidate,
right.
As I think I said in my piece. He's about as celebrity as they come.
Right.
Never having run for political office before, he really is the draw this cycle so far from a celebrity perspective.
What does history tell us about celebrity endorsements? I know in the piece you had a picture of Sinatra and JFK, for example.
Right, right. And Al Jolson and Warren Harding from 1920.
Wow.
The Rat Pack, as you said, in 1960. And look, Ronald Reagan was an actor. So Hollywood and Washington have intersected over the years in many, many ways. I would go back again to the Oprah endorsement, because I think that historically her endorsement showed us that someone with incredible reach and power and brand has the capacity to move voters.
Thanks, Jen. Jennifer Scalca Tulumello, Boston Globe correspondent, 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Ready for what we traditionally consider flu season? Well, consider this. Some studies show the flu vaccine usually works 50 to 60% of the time, except last year when a mutated strain rendered it just 13% effective. This season's shot protects against that mutation. But if 60% is the effective rate, how can we do more to protect ourselves? Consider the approach from Dr. Tel Franklin, board-certified family physician who's based in Monterey, California. Dr. Franklin, give us guidance.
Getting the influenza or flu shot is the second best way to protect you and your family from getting the flu. The first is optimizing your immune system. The first is making sure that you just have a strong, powerful immune system. We forget that the immune system is the most powerful force in the entire universe when it comes to healing. So good nutrition, good exercise, minimizing your stress, getting good sleep, and really paying attention to how you're feeling.
All right. Meaning what, paying attention to how you're feeling?
Well, you know, when you're feeling stressed, you could say to yourself, you know what? I'm feeling a little stressed. I need to go for a walk. To be really in tune to your emotions. Don't let your emotions control you. You control your own emotions.
What does that have to do with the flu, though?
It has everything to do with the flu, because when you're really stressed, when you're really angry, when you have a lot of negativity, when you're really upset, it compromises your immune system. Whether you get the flu or not depends upon, one, is if you're exposed, and the second is the status of your immune system, and your emotions really can wreak havoc on your immune system. When you come home at the end of the day and you've got a great partner waiting for you, it really creates health. It really creates, you know, more immunological protection against your body. When you come home at the end of the day and you're going through maybe an argument, maybe a divorce, maybe a separation, it actually creates a compromise in your immune system by raising your cortisol level, which really compromises your ability to fight infection.
Didn't realize that. All right, so on that note then, the flu mutations that we've seen, are they alarming to somebody like you, or is it just about medicine keeping up? Do you not like using so much medicine to fight it? How do you see all this?
You know, I see it as part of a continuum. I see that whether or not you should get the flu shot, and I do recommend influenza vaccine, I do recommend the flu shot, but I think it needs to be part of a greater conversation with your family doctor about what you can do to prevent heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and all chronic diseases. So what I've done is I've created an app. It's free, no advertisement. It's available on Apple, and it's called TelMD, T-E-L-M-D Level 1. And what it does is it gives you the tools for greater happiness, greater health, and more balance in your life.
Very good. We're speaking with Dr. Tel Franklin, family physician, whose practice is based in Monterey, California. We're talking about how to protect yourself against flu mutations. All right, so the app, for example, I got a teenage son. The best I could do is get an apple in him one day, maybe a banana in him the next day. I can't get vegetables. How does somebody, you know, a kid like that, build up his immune system if he can't get him to eat veggies?
You take bananas, you put them in the freezer, and you make a smoothie. You throw some kale and spinach in it, and he thinks it's a milkshake.
Is that easy, huh?
Well, you know, I think we got to be creative, and I think that's what the app's about. That's what the website's about. It's about how can we be creative and strategically give people a personalized regimen to live the healthiest life as possible. You got a lot of stuff that goes on in life, but there's nothing more critical. There's nothing more important than your own health. And so what I'm trying to do is give people some creative strategies so they can get the most out of health and in turn get the most out of life.
What is it that we eat and drink that can hurt the immune system?
You know, the worst thing is soda. So carbonated beverages is the worst. The second is all the fast food that's out there. I mean, the reason why it's called fast junk food is because it's fast and it's junk food. I mean, you are what you eat all day long. You know, the more processed the food is, the worse it is for you. And milk, you're going to drink milk, drink, you know, almond milk, drink cashew milk, but do not drink cow's milk. Goat's milk's better because cow's milk contains casein in it. So I think that, you know, if you can think back to when you had breakfast or lunch or dinner, you know, at your grandmother's, you know, a number of years ago, or if you come from a different country, what it was in Mexico or Afghanistan or, you know, Bangladesh or India, that's the way the food should be. It should be less processed. So the more processed the food is, the higher it's going to wreak havoc, not only on the immune system, but it's going to raise your blood sugar, it's going to raise your insulin level, and it's going to create inflammation, which in turn creates a cascade of chronic illnesses.
Thanks, Doctor. Dr. Tel Franklin, board-certified family physician based in Monterey, California. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. It's not your grandfather's state fair anymore. This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka says they're trying to boost attendance with different approaches.
They aren't just about petting animals and eating cotton candy. These days, state fairs are employing all kinds of novelties to get us there. Here with more on the story is Valerie Borline of the Wall Street Journal. Valerie, why are state fairs ramping up the entertainment these days?
Well, state fairs have been around in this country almost two centuries, and they've always been a place that celebrates agriculture, arts and crafts. But more and more, many of us are living in cities, and we have literally hundreds of entertainment options, and state fairs are deciding, hey, what can we do to compete with everything else that's out there? We need to stay true to who we are, have a lot of agriculture, but also do some things to get people in the door and generate some excitement.
Are they specifically going after some younger people who maybe have shorter attention spans than they used to?
That's part part of it. And at state fairs, most state fairs these days, you're likely to see selfie stands or charging stations, karaoke stands, even lots of things that appeal to younger people, lots of technology. And then also, we are becoming so much more multicultural and diverse, especially in cities like Raleigh, North Carolina, where I went to the fair. That's a city that's doubled in population in 20 years, and a lot of the folks who are in Central North Carolina come from other places and maybe other countries.
Let's talk about that. What kind of entertainment, then, are they reaching out with?
Well, North Carolina, I think, is doing something that's particularly unique. They bagged their longtime tradition of having sort of one-hit wonders come to the arena on the fairgrounds every night of the fair for what they're calling a homegrown North Carolina concert series. And it is a really diverse list of 80 acts. So you have bluegrass, and you'll have some acoustic country bands. You had a big Bollywood night, for example, with, you know, dozens of Bollywood tradition dancers. Then you have a night that was appealing to have Mexican cultural music, Mexican dancing, West African dancing. You just have a wide array of pretty much every culture you can name represented at the state fair.
You're talking about different cultures. I would imagine that spills over to food. What kinds of new foods are we seeing?
You're seeing some new foods. You really are. Even in the traditional competitions, like the sweet potato competition, you'll see a spicy curry sweet potato meal with all sorts of cardamom and exotic ingredients. And on the midway, there's still the gold rush to come up with what's the latest deep fried food. This year, there's deep fried Klondike bars, deep fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But there's also gluten-free options. There's hummus, and chickpea fries is a big thing at the fair this year. So there's really a mix of food available at a lot of these state fairs these days.
Valerie, is there any pushback from farmers or other people involved in state fairs that are more traditionalists?
Well, you know, I think there is a hope that we as a culture will cling to our agricultural roots and understand the importance of growing food and produce and livestock. But there's also an understanding that, hey, look, petting zoos have created in the past at some state fairs some health issues. There was an E. coli outbreak that was traced to a state fair in North Carolina, for example, and they don't do the petting zoo anymore as a result of that. It's also created more distance between humans and animals to avoid any sort of cross-pollination there. So I think there is an understanding maybe we can have both and. So, yes, we can have some multicultural and technological whiz-bang type things, but then also still celebrate the biggest pumpkin. There's a 900-pound pumpkin at the North Carolina State Fair that is really impressive, and they want people to see that too.
900-pound pumpkin. Wow. This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borline. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. A lot of people in Iowa were closely watching a parole board case this past week. Ultimately, parole was denied to a prisoner convicted of deliberately transmitting HIV to his ex-girlfriend. State officials said the decision came down to the inmate's failure to take personal accountability. The case involves inmate Lonnie Tabor and victim Catherine Richards. The Iowa Board of Parole said it couldn't justify releasing Mr. Tabor after serving 6 years of a 25-year sentence. More from Bill Petrosky at the Des Moines Register. Bill, explain the case.
She was in a three-year relationship with a guy, and they lived together for about 2 years. And when they met, she noticed that he didn't appear to be in really good health. And he said, "Well, you know, it's a variety of things, but you know, I don't have AIDS." Or at least he made it clear to her that he didn't have HIV. He was not HIV positive. So their relationship went along. And then after about 3 years that they were together or so, she took off on a cruise with her sister, and she came back and she found out he was in jail, and he'd been arrested for attempted sexual assault. And she said the detective came up to her here in Des Moines and said, "You need to know something. Are you aware that this fellow is HIV positive?" And she said she just about fell over, and no, she didn't know it. She got tested, and she turned out to also be HIV positive. Charges were filed against him, both for the attempted sexual assault and for felony transmission of the HIV virus. And he was convicted by a jury here in Polk County, Iowa, and was sentenced to prison for up to 25 years in prison.
We're speaking with Bill Petrosky. He's public affairs reporter at the Des Moines Register. He's got a fascinating piece entitled "He Gave Her HIV, She Fights His Prison Release." So what about this rewritten law in Iowa?
Well, basically, his name is Lonnie Shane Tabor. He's 50 years old. He was convicted under a state law that was passed in 1998, and there was a great deal of debate in the Iowa legislature over this law. There was discussion by gay rights advocates and people who were just concerned about infectious diseases, that this law was just way too draconian. It was product of the anti-AIDS hysteria of the 1990s. Essentially, what they said was this law discouraged testing and disclosure because of severe penalties associated with knowing one's status. So the Iowa legislature rewrote this law last year, and basically they said you're only going to get the 25-year felony if you intentionally transmit disease and if you transmit it without the consent of an uninfected person. There are lesser penalties for other types of transmission. So, but he's not affected by this, but this whole thing is happening against the backdrop of this.
Right. All right. So it was proven then that he did this deliberately, that he gave her HIV deliberately?
Well, the law, the way that it was written back then, it wasn't written exactly as it is now,
okay.
But it was, you know, it was proven that he transmitted the disease to her, and she's saying that he lied about what the status was, and the jury had agreed.
But she can't work, right? She's on disability
from
all this?
That's exactly right. We're talking about a woman. This woman worked for Wells Fargo, and she was a project manager and a business consultant, had a six-figure income, and now she says she's 43 years old. She says she suffers terrible PTSD and anxiety, and she's just not able to work. Her health is stable now, as you're aware, because of various medications. People don't die routinely from HIV like they used to. So her health is pretty good, but she's just not able to work, and so she is living on disability payments.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Petrosky at the Des Moines Register. Some case. It's 21 minutes now before the hour. Apple CEO Tim Cook recently announced that revolution is coming to the auto industry. In reality, Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman says the car business is already undergoing massive change without any help from Apple. Rick, what do you mean?
Well, why Apple, you might ask? And the reason is Apple is supposedly developing this big automotive division. They haven't announced anything yet, but there's a lot of speculation that Apple's going to get into the car business in one way or another. Maybe it's building a car. Maybe it's supplying components for other people who build cars. And so everybody wants to know what Apple's plans are, and Apple CEO Tim Cook was at a panel discussion recently where the moderator asked him, "What do you think is going to happen with the car industry?" And he said, "I see massive change coming to the car industry," as if this is something that hasn't happened yet and is about to happen soon. In reality, anybody who works in the car industry knows it's been undergoing massive change for years now, without any involvement from Apple, and that's likely to continue whether Apple gets into business or not.
Right. All right, so self-driving cars obviously is on this list. Explain that and then some of the others.
Self-driving cars are getting lots of attention, primarily because Google
has gotten into this business, and they've created basically a big laboratory for testing self-driving cars. Tesla talks a lot about self-driving capabilities in some of its cars. And again, these are sort of Silicon Valley companies that get a lot of attention in the press, but these are not Tesla's an automotive company, but Google's not. And in reality, again, in the cars that are actually on the road being sold by automakers, technologies that allow different forms of self-driver and autonomous operation have actually been showing up in cars for probably 10 years. This is stuff like adaptive cruise control, which can tell how far ahead of you the car is up in front, and then adjust your speed based on keeping a safe distance between your car and the car in front. There are systems that can tell if there are cars on the side of you and whether it's safe to change lanes. Yeah. There are other systems that monitor the lane markings and can tell when you are drifting out of your lane and might have fallen asleep at the wheel or something like that. These are all technologies that are actually showing up in cars today. They've been under development for years and years. These things usually are a fairly slow and incremental rollout, but in reality, the car is actually on sale today. We are seeing self-driving capabilities, once again, without any involvement in the actual car business from the technology companies in California that seem to be getting most of the attention.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. His piece is called Cars Are Already Undergoing Massive Change with No Help from Apple. Yeah. If folks have seen the new General Motors commercial, they may have seen the company kind of touting this wireless connection that's standard on a lot of its cars. Explain interneted cars, Rick.
Sure. It's not complicated. It basically is an interconnect connection that goes directly to your car. This General Motors is making this a standard feature on most of its 2016 models. Now, you have to pay for a cellular connection. It's usually a 4G LTE connection. You can do that through the carrier you already have with your mobile phone, or you can set it up independent of that. So it's not free, but it's also not that expensive. And for the moment, this allows you to do things such as download music or things like that straight into your car. You can connect mobile devices to the car and use the car as a Wi-Fi hotspot rather than doing it through your own cellular connection, which might eat up your data. Now, of course, you shouldn't do that if you're a driver, like staring at your laptop and checking email, but passengers can do it. Those are sort of the information and entertainment applications. There are bigger applications coming soon, and this is the ability of a dealer or the automaker to monitor the performance of your car, if there are some fixes that might be necessary, if it relates to software, to actually be able to beam those fixes over the air instead of forcing you to go into a dealer.
That'd be nice, right? Beaming fixes over the air. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. 13 minutes before the hour on This Weekend. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. On sports, you can probably predict that ratings for something like Monday Night Football are far better than those for even the baseball playoffs. But Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay says, who cares? Just enjoy the drama. Jason, how do you see it?
This time of year, Gordon, we have the baseball playoffs well underway. We are deep into our postseason. And there's a segment of the population, Gordon, I don't know if you know about North American football, but there's this other game called the NFL. They play it on Sundays usually, but they also got it on Thursday nights and Monday nights. And there is a segment of the population, Gordon, that loves this sport and loves to gleefully point out how the television ratings for football absolutely dwarf baseball in its postseason prime, meaning a regular pedestrian, inconsequential, basically Thursday night football game will vastly, sometimes triple outrate a baseball playoff game, even a do or die baseball playoff game. And my argument here, Gordon, is really outside of television executives, outside of advertisers, outside of people who are actually in the business of trying to make a buck off of these playoff games, does it matter to you? Does it matter to the fan? Does any baseball person who's actually watching these great, great games, these tense contests, are you watching this and in the middle of that ninth inning and you're saying to yourself, oh, I wonder how many people are watching Sunday Night Football? No, you're not. You're enjoying the moment. You're enjoying the game. And so it was just kind of an effort here in this column to sort of take a respite from the numbers and say, you know what? Baseball is baseball. It's a wonderful sport. It's particularly spectacular in October. What's taking away from your enjoyment of the game if people are watching football? Football is a totally different enterprise. It's just kind of saying, giving a little bit of perspective here, Gordon, that we shouldn't get so swept up in a popularity contest.
I like it. All right, so there has been, as you sort of alluded to, a lot of drama so far this October, especially with the Blue Jays and the way their division series ended. I mean, and now you've got four teams in the playoffs who haven't won a World Series in basically a generation.
Yes, yes. I mean, listen, you know, I grew up a Red Sox fan. I remember 1986 vividly, so it's very hard for me to look at the New York Mets with any sort of like, oh, sad sack New York Mets. Oh, they haven't been there so long. Like, listen, they right. ruined my childhood, Gordon. I can't, you know, get that out of my head.
Right.
But, yes.
Fair point. Changing subjects slightly, I'm a little disappointed where you point out that the Jets, my Jets, are now 4-1, and then you follow up with just three words I felt were devastating. You said, I got nothing.
I mean, well, I have something. I mean, listen, if you're in the sports writing business, you know, the Jets are kind of like airline food. You know, they're just a reliable source of situational comedy. And when the Jets are good, it really sort of cuts down on the punchlines that you can deliver reliably in a sports column. I don't know what to do when the Jets are rolling along. But the good news, Gordon, is I've already penciled them in as 4-2. They have the Patriots in Foxborough. And I don't know, Gordon. I don't see these guys as being the juggernaut we once had with Mark Sanchez and Rex Ryan rolling up there in the playoffs.
Fair enough. Before we go, can you give us a little preview of the book coming out early November?
Gordon, yes, I have a book. I have a book coming out November 3rd. It's called Little Victories. I actually sat down and typed the whole thing out myself. It is a life advice book. You know, Gordon, you go to the airport, you see 50,000 life advice books, and you sit there and say, which one, which one?
Yes.
I just think it's crazy, and everybody's off promising you, like, happiness in 4 hours and a better body in 20 minutes and all this. This is an antidote to all that.
Thanks, Jason. Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay. Again, the book comes out November 3. It's called Little Victories, Perfect Rules for Imperfect Living. Not to pour salt in the wounds of Cubs fans, but there's this piece from thebiglead.com. Murphy is a name that's cursed the Cubs for many years. The curse started when a fan and his billy goat, Murphy, were kicked out of a game during the 1945 World Series. Then the curse picked back up again in 1969 when the Mets won the World Series. Why does that have anything to do with the Murphy curse? Would you believe that the Mets GM in 69 was Johnny Murphy and their announcer was Bob Murphy? Then the Cubs lost three games at Jack Murphy Stadium in the 1984 NLCS. Recently, the website says the curse flash-forwarded 31 years, and Daniel Murphy hit a bunch of home runs as the Mets swept the Cubs. And what a curse, it says. The most amazing part was that it somehow retroactively kept the Cubs from making a World Series between 1908 and 1945. Oh, the last time the Cubs won a World Series was in 1908. The owner at the time, Charles Murphy. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.